Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the On Wall Street conference call with Dr. Alden Katz. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session by first name only. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Robert Hertzberg. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for participating in and listening in on this second teleconference that we're doing with Dr. Alden Katz. I'm Robert Hertzberg. I'm the editorial director of On Wall Street Magazine, and we're here today to hear a little bit more, scratch a little bit more out of Dr. Katz after last time. There's a great deal, obviously, in the world of emotion and motivation that affects how we all do at work, certainly how advisors do and how successful they are. And we started down that track last time, and we're going to continue on that today with some issues that are very, very important to, I would expect, just about all of you listening. And that's how to deal with angry feelings and rage and how to channel that in some particular situations, including the management of irate clients and dealing with office politics. The turnout for the last session was great. The turnout for this session is great. We really appreciate your interest. We do encourage you also to ask questions, and you won't be identified in case this matters by last name, only by first name and not by firm. So if you want to ask questions, you can get queued up at any point in today's session. I was pleased to get some notes through email for some questions for Dr. Katz, which we hope to have a chance to, I hope to have a chance to ask later, just before we start the question and answer session. So with no further ado, I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Katz and hope for a great session.
All right. Thanks so much, Robert. It's a pleasure to be back today after the second of my three-part series of workshops. Let's see. I initially created this workshop, Channeled Rage Workshop, to use with corporate attorneys who are well known for their adversarial nature and hot-headed behaviors that can get them into trouble in the courtroom. Sometimes in like the heat of the battle or, you know, in the courtroom, an opponent in court uses unfair tactics or may sidewind them with evidence that they could not prepare for. This leads to emotional reactivity in the courtroom, and as a result of that, senior partners sought me out to help these litigators control these reactive behaviors on big cases because of how their antics negatively reflected on the firm as a whole. Recently, more Wall Street branch managers have brought to me similar issues that have required similar strategies to put out fires between their employees and clients that eventually led to lawsuits, actually. So I guess it's fair to say that anger is not just for lawyers. It can be for just about anyone in high-pressure, high-stakes jobs. So there's plenty that your clients or colleagues at work can do to you to catch you off guard and send you off into a rage. Additionally, I guess there's also plenty that goes on in the heat of a sales day that can make you feel underappreciated, minimized, and or sidewinded. So let's just jump right into the material today. I created this workshop because I've been flooded with clients in my coaching practice who are faced with work scenarios where they feel that they're out of control. There's a great deal of control one must give up in this business in order to work as a financial advisor, especially when you're working with markets and clients' emotions that are so volatile. And as you'll soon find out, it's the perception that one has about how much control he or she has over a specific event that is linked to whether or not they become frustrated, angry, or rageful. So I believe that if you decided to attend today's workshop, you've probably asked yourself similar questions to that of my clients during the course of your workday, such as the one shown on slide number one, common questions that need answers. So I've broken that down to questions from financial advisors, what might flow through your head during a day, common questions from administrative assistants or investment associates, and common questions from branch managers that, you know, they might ask themselves also. Just the most specific ones that I find interesting, the questions that come out of my work with this industry is, you know, the financial advisors out there, they've asked, why do I hate talking to this client? Why can't I be heard by my branch manager? Why can't I get this client to understand my point? Or why can't I have the same respect and support from my management team that the top performers receive? These are of the most pertinent ones that I've come across. For administrative assistants, why can't I get any respect from the financial advisors I work for? Why can't the financial advisor show me the appreciation that I deserve for keeping their business on track? And why do they dump projects on me at the last minute? Why can't they see that my time is valuable too? Just as a side note, for all the financial advisors out there, your business will only be as successful as your administrative assistants are happy. That's just from my experience in terms of having things get done for you and things operating. For branch managers, key questions. Why does this top performer demand and not ask me for help? Or how can I show my advisor how much others in the office are put off by his or her angry and abusive behaviors? Today we're going to attempt to answer some of these most pertinent questions that I just went over. These are some common questions that reflect the trend that I've seen on Wall Street that seems to be an inability to ask for things in an assertive and non-threatening way. Too often I've received complaints that advisors in the workplace rock the boat rather than plan a reasonable and or tactful strategy to get what they want from others. Rocking the boat may be of use to get noticed in the first place and selected to be part of an elite firm, or might have gotten someone a high net worth client initially, but this type of behavior can really get you in trouble within your office with your colleagues, administrative assistants, branch manager, or just your clients in general. Those who rock the boat tend to follow the belief or the contention that they are entitled to follow a completely different set of rules than his or her colleagues. The corporate consensus reflects a belief that paying attention to feelings may interfere with getting the job done. So consequently, individuals who often follow this way of existing become oblivious to the effect that they're having on others. They tend to be judgmental of colleagues or clients who can't control their emotions, yet these same individuals often fail to notice how ineffectively they vent their own anger and frustration, and how they're perceived. So, what is anger? I'm going to turn to the continuum of anger on slide number two. And anger, I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about anger right now. Anger is a completely normal, usually healthy emotion that, if kept in check, can actually lead to productive, competitive behaviors at work and a great deal of motivation to succeed and persist even during stressful times. However, if it's not managed properly, it can be destructive and lead to problems at work and in your personal relationships. The intensity of anger, as you can see on the slide, can be measured along a continuum, ranging from competitive, which is the good type of motivator, to mild irritation, to frustration, to fury and rage. These states of emotion are accompanied by both physiological and biological changes, like high blood pressure or health problems, which I will talk about later. It can also be caused by both external and internal events. For example, a client taking his money elsewhere, which I guess would be an external event, or if you are ruminating about your personal problems with a coworker or a significant other, that would be considered an internal event. Lastly, anger can be displayed outwardly. Example would be yelling, screaming, cursing, throwing your phone, or it can be directed inward against oneself, usually leading to symptoms of behavioral paralysis, which is a term I mentioned last workshop, which is synonymous with depression and burnout, or depression. Often those who turn anger inward display it to others using passive-aggressive tactics, such as being unnecessarily critical, cynical or hostile to coworkers, clients, or significant others. The goal today is to enrich your life with skills on how to reduce both the painful emotions and physiological arousal that anger causes while keeping you competitive at work. You can't get rid of or sidestep the events or people that enrage you, nor can you change them. but you can learn to manage your perceptions and consequently your reactions to them. So we're going to turn briefly to the objectives of today's workshop, page 3. So hopefully when you get through this, you'll be able to glean, most importantly, how to abide by the three R's, which include recognizing the symptoms of anger along its continuum, to use rational thinking as taught through our channeled rage monitoring logs, and finally, the last R, relating assertively to others using what we call the hard E method. As I mentioned on the objectives slide, as we go on to page 4, the nature of anger, frustration, and rage, recognizing the symptoms, the first R is for recognizing the symptoms of anger. As we go up the continuum, as shown on that slide depicting a thermometer, the symptoms become more and more pronounced and visible to others. Advisors can make anger appear to be obvious through their verbalizations and actions, or make it more subtle and hard to understand when they turn it inward against themselves. Branch managers often wonder why some of their top performers are as emotionally reactive as a flame might be around gasoline. They can't figure out why they become so draining as employees and demanding of others in their immediate environment. And it turns out that these individuals, because of their use of depersonalization, which we talked about in the Bullish Thinking Workshop, which is defined as an emotional callousing towards their clients and emotional numbing to oneself, to block out awareness of their own anger, these individuals, they lack the insight into their noxious behaviors. So on page 4, we have a checklist of some of the most obvious and subtle symptoms of anger or rage that might require an intervention at some point from your management team. The most obvious of these warning signs, as I look down the list, is overt hostility towards coworkers, clients and significant others, and shouting on the phone. And some of the more subtle ones include, depersonalization, passive-aggressive behaviors, like missed meetings, avoided phone calls, being late to work frequently, subtle attempts to make others look foolish, being critical and cynical. And the most obvious ones, I would also say that increase in demands, that rock the boat mentality, is what it tends to stir up a pot in an office. And people don't know what's going on with a particular individual, but they just know something is not right. So for the branch managers in the audience today, angry employees tend to demand things such as fairness, appreciation, and a willingness to do things their way. They make statements that begin with words like, I demand, or I must have something, rather than, I would like it, or it would be nice to have something, or it would be really helpful if I had this, which is a healthier way of stating your wants. When their needs are not immediately gratified, they view it as a personal attack or indignity. Angry top performers also tend to jump to conclusions and act on them just as impulsively without thinking. They don't listen well to others, and if enraged, say the first things that enter into their minds. If you've seen these individuals before, I'm sure you've scratched your head and said to yourself, where did that statement come from? Our channeled rage monitoring log system allows these individuals to think rationally before they act on pure emotion. All right, we're going to move to the next slide, profiling of financial advisors. My research team at Catalyst Strategies Group has conducted research on the personality traits of advisors and traders. Some of these traits are recurrent in research literature, such as even in the Harvard Business Review, and significantly correlated with the profile of successful traders and advisors. However, these are generalizations from this research on this particular slide. Some of these traits are positive and some are negative in terms of problems that they may cause for an individual or for the people who work or live with them. Let's go through some of them today, because you will see in next month's workshop, Subtle Sales Training, how some of these attributes come across to your clients or colleagues and may impact whether or not you close them or remain respected at work, respectively. Many of you may be laughing as you go through this list, because I'm sure if you're really honest with yourself, you would likely check off a majority of these characteristics as being true for yourself. However, for the purposes of today, I think we should focus on traits such as, a poor modulation of any expression of anger, sensitivity to criticism, which, you know, I also found that they're highly critical of themselves for mistakes in my research initially. 96% of my sample reported that they were highly critical of themselves for mistakes. Advisors, some of these top performers tend to be rigid and unchangeable, which makes for a negotiation or a compromise very difficult in office politics. They tend to like things that focus on the concrete, and they don't like things that are vague or ambiguous at all. They have a lot of difficulty with vague tasks, and they definitely like more tangible things, like talking about numbers and facts. I have down here unempathetic, which, like I said before, there's a high level of depersonalization, which means an emotional callousing towards oneself and to others when you are working very hard, and this is a defense mechanism. And they also have high performance expectations for themselves and others, because many of these lead to problems, like getting along with others at work or, you know, lowering your frustration tolerance, and, you know, these people blow up. So, also, interestingly enough, there's a high level of paranoia and suspiciousness because they're always feeling as if people have wronged them. Most of these successful guys that have anger issues as well. So, moving along to work practices that put you in the red zone. My coaching practices supply me with a tremendous amount of examples of workplace events specific to financial advisors that uniformly place brokers into the red zone. The red zone is that rage zone that we talk about. Often these events or situations leave an advisor feeling out of control, and because they're unaware of the emotions that are building up inside of them, they lash out against others or themselves, creating very negative consequences. Here are some examples on this page, and I would say the most prominent work events that anger or fluster my FAs involve office politics, competing priorities between work, family, ethics, and morals, clients' complaints to management behind their back, clients being impatient, unaware, misinformed, or micromanaging their own work, not being in the communication pipeline with the corporate hierarchy about upcoming products, policy or staff changes, outdated technology, and administrative red tape, and not meeting production benchmarks, not just not feeling they have enough administrative support to deal with all the finite details that makes a successful business. I think it's also important to talk about the fact that there continues to be some problems, you know, with the objectification of women in the workplace through subtle or sometimes obvious sexual remarks that someone can overhear. I've known some advisors who have been suspended and or fired just for telling a rated PG story about his date the night before to one of his buddies by the coffee machine. So use this as a reminder to keep your war stories under wrap until you get outside of work. And let's not forget that the reverse can also be true for women in the workplace now, too. And we're going to move on to the next slide, consequences of being in the red zone. And as I mentioned, once an advisor drifts into that holy land, the red zone, their anger can flood them and others around them, creating for themselves and the firm as a whole a great deal of negative consequences. These negative consequences of being in the red zone at work even reach out and drain your relationships at home. So here are some things to think about before you act on your anger and rage, and you do it out in an aggressive manner. So the first one the first consequence that I noted is isolation from coworkers and from the branch manager. Typically, a guy's really piping hot, steaming, or an advisor is. These are the people hiding in the corner of their office. They don't want to talk to anyone. They become so withdrawn and aloof that they hold all of that emotion in. We see an increase in drug and alcohol abuse, people being late for appointments, deterioration of personal appearance, yelling at coworkers or clients. If you've ever heard one of your colleagues do that, you know that they're definitely having a rough time dealing and managing with their emotions. Promoting a tense work environment. Action based on emotion rather than logic and common sense is a huge problem. Clouded judgment on decisions to be made involving major accounts. You can't think clearly if your mind is flooded with that emotion. You know, we talk about irrational exuberance and the problems that caused in the past. Well, this is the same deal, and you're dealing with large sums of money. Team deterioration. Many teams have just broken up of teams of financial advisors, partners, because people don't know how to express themselves and communicate properly. You see a lot of passive-aggressive behaviors displayed, less support from administrative assistants, support staff, and branch manager. You could really turn off people from wanting to work with you if you can't control your anger, because people will not want to be on the other end of that. It's interesting that when advisors come to me initially, they tell me that the firm or their client or their colleagues have unfairly treated them in some manner, completely distancing themselves from taking part in the cause for the situation in the first place. Once I drill down with them on the events that led up to the wrongdoing that they perceived, they're finally able to admit that they could have taken more proactive and tactical steps to have avoided this problem in the first place. You'll see some examples of this later in the workshop. So we go to the page 8, identifying the impact of losing control of our emotions. We're going to talk about how to identify what emotion you're experiencing when you feel like you have no control over a situation. Since your job description requires that you deal with a great amount of uncertainty and events that are out of your control, I thought it was important to show you how to manage the emotions that are often present during these conditions. So we're going to move on page 9 is an exercise that I use to help advisors understand that powerful emotions are at work when they lose the perception of control during the day. I'm sure that there are plenty of New Yorkers in the audience today, along with many others who have visited Manhattan. You all appreciate this next segment called Train Spotting, aimed at helping you understand feelings like frustration when things get out of control. It's fair to assume that most of you have been late for an appointment and needed to make it to a train or bus to get there on time. So one of the most powerless feelings imaginable is when you get to a train station or bus stop, and the train or bus is just leaving when you get there. In New York City, there is no indication of when the next train will arrive. And people, you just see them, they're waiting, they're powerless with their heads focused on the dark tracks, willing the next train to arrive. It's a very frustrating experience. Because once that train or bus leaves the station, you're faced with the realization that you will be waiting for the next one to arrive longer than anyone else who enters into the subway or bus stop after you. In this scenario where you have no control over changing your physical situation or outcome, it's important to think of some productive things to do to manage this frustration. My audiences over time have supplied me with the following examples of 4 productive things to do while waiting for a train. And you know, I think you'll find that you've probably done these, or hopefully these will be helpful for you to add to your arsenal. But do your research. Read periodicals like the Wall Street Journal or your copy of On Wall Street magazine, the Financial Times. You know, understand what's going on in the markets. Obviously, this is second nature to you guys, but doing that gives you the edge. Use your BlackBerry or your Trio to check email or conduct internet research on stocks or funds that you're interested in. Daily scheduling. Generate a list of daily priorities. You know, go over your callbacks. Who do you have to call today? Do you have any new leads? Is there any new businesses that you should be going after? Or different sectors that you should be focusing on? Just basically generating a schedule for yourself will keep you structured and organized. And also you can, you know, kill 2 birds with 1 stone, get that morning coffee and the bagel, and you're good. And you get that out of the way. You can get to work with, you know, get off the plane running and just start working right from scratch. Also, and actually I can promise you that you will find that by keeping your mind busy on that train, it will help you handle anxiety that is often related to feeling out of control. Let's talk about a work-related event that you personally have no control over but still remained as a frustrating aspect of your job. One example is that there were times during the fiscal year that the markets and your phone seemed to be dead and lifeless. We all know that this is so frustrating and often leads to work apathy and feeling like no one wants to invest with you and it's never going to happen. But the important thing to remember is that every day that you go to work, whether the markets are hot or cold, is a chance to build upon another part of your business that you ordinarily don't have time to focus on when the markets and phones are hot. So here are some suggestions made by some of your peers on how to be productive during dry spells. They said, think of new marketing strategies to grow business. Be proactive in contacting old and current clients, you know, via email or mass mailings. Be proactive in attending outside organizations, clubs, or groups to increase networking and grow your business. And finally, the fourth one is to strategize about new ways to request client referrals. You always want the edge. If you want the cream of the crop client, you have to be better than everyone else and think outside of the box for how you're going to get them. And the more you expose yourself to, the more creative ideas you'll have. And lastly, my audience attempted to identify what emotions they are actually feeling when things are out of control and they have no chance of changing their situation. The top four emotions reported were anxiety, impatience, frustration, and a sense of powerlessness, all at pretty intense levels that seem to affect them. I do this exercise right before we get to channeled rage because I feel that it's important to know what we're feeling before we start attacking the thoughts that bring us into a rage. And as we got from my, profiling information, a lot of financial advisors don't really have a good grasp on their emotions and what they have trouble identifying what they're feeling at a certain moment. So on page 10, we have two powerful quotations from Chinese philosopher Sun Tzu, who was the author of The Art of War, that emphasize the importance of being tactical, prepared, and insightful in knowing yourself, and at the same time, being able to read others in order to be successful in getting what you want and being heard. I think Sun Tzu would be a big fan of channeled rage if he was around today for this teleconference. So, what is channeled rage and rational thinking? On page 11, the second R that we'll focus on now relates to using rational thought as a defense against destructive emotions. Channeled rage is a concept that I developed that is rooted in the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy. It uses practical and palatable language to teach others that rational thought is required to defeat enraging thoughts and emotional decision-making when faced with a frustrating work event. As you'll see, channeled thoughts lead to productive behaviors that have minimal consequences, while enraging thoughts lead to emotional decisions and reactivity that will carry significantly negative outcomes that will impact you physically, socially, occupationally, and possibly financially. Just to put things in a proper perspective regarding emotions such as frustration and anger, think about how different your jobs are from that of National Football League players. Both jobs require high levels of competitiveness, but NFL players are not afforded the same opportunities that FAs are in terms of thinking through their feelings rather than just acting on them. Football players in the heat of the battle can only react to their intense emotions, often creating penalties for their teams when those emotions become wildly uncontrollable, such as roughing the passer or unnecessary roughness calls. As a financial advisor, you can sit back when you're frustrated and think through some ways to approach a confrontation before you actually face it. That's a luxury. For example, you can always tell an irate client that you will call him back and make him or her feel as if you're fact-finding for them. This will give you enough time to prepare yourself emotionally by going through the steps of a channeled rage monitoring log. By doing this, you won't put yourself or your team at risk of a penalty. So we move to page 12, which is a copy of our channeled rage monitoring log. I'm going to show you how my clients use the channeled rage log in practice. As you can see, I try to make this format very concrete and percentage-based to help speed up the learning process and the FA's receptivity for the information. Andrew, the financial advisor who filled out this form for me, over time became A-list at filling out this form on his own. Let's see how he learned to control his anger at work by going through this step by step. The first column, under frustrating event, I ask Andrew to put down an actual event leading to feeling of rage or anger. And he put down as his frustrating event, "It's 9:30 a.m. on Monday morning, and my client left me a long voicemail at 8 a.m. that morning. He's a longtime client who has a history of micromanaging his account's performance. He stated that he's tired of doing my job for me and that he's unsatisfied and wants to take his money elsewhere." If I had a dime for every financial advisor who came to me who had that exact story happen, I'd be very wealthy today. The second column that he had to work within was the type of rage or anger or emotion that he felt at the time. I always have them fill that out and rate whether it was type of rage or anger that was directed outward or inward against himself. And also I ask my clients to enter their emotion and rate the degree of rage on a 100-point scale, 100% meaning it's through the roof rage, and 1% meaning nothing, really, and, you know, neutral feeling at 50%. So he put down that his anger was at a 98% rate, his frustration was at 95%, worry was at 95%, and it was directed outward. All those emotions were out on the table and affecting him. It was for everyone to see. And the next column is enraging thoughts. I ask Andrew to write down reactionary thoughts that preceded the identified sensation of rage or anger. So initially, I want him to notice the feeling. What is he feeling? Okay, what's the event that's going on? Is his next step. He's already accomplished the event. He knows the feeling. Well, now what's the thought that preceded that? So then I ask him to rate the belief in the reality-based nature of this thought on a 100% scale again. And, you know, 100% meaning this has to be true. There's no question that this is true. There's no room for error on that statement. Or 1% meaning this can't be true, this won't be true. And you get the gist. So his enraging thoughts that he wrote down was, this guy is unbearable. It's becoming too intolerable to service this guy. To call and leave a voicemail at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning and threaten to take his money elsewhere is such a four-letter word, you figure it out, move. I'm going to tell this guy off. He doesn't respect me or my assistant. He rated that at that moment as being 90% true. He really put a lot of stock in this initial belief when he was charged up with those high emotions of 98% and 95% for frustration and worry along with anger. Then he goes to behavioral outcome, where he's going to write down the behavioral consequences of thinking and feeling this way. And was it positive or negative? He wrote down that he avoided return calls to that client for the day. He blew off other colleagues. He was short-tempered with other clients. That could affect his business. He was anxious at home with his wife. And he had an argument with her, all of which he noted were negative. Then, this is where the work comes in. I asked him to take the time to force himself to think about more rational ways of thinking or perceiving his situation by exploring alternative solutions and finding holes in his first enraging thoughts. As you can see under the enraging thoughts column, there is these underlying words like too intolerable or he doesn't respect me. Those were those words from Barish vocabulary that we presented in last month's workshop. These are absolute terms that leave no room for error, but they're so easily disprovable by reality-based evidence that he can come up with from his history. So the goal here is to disprove his first enraging thought with proof. So he could write and re-rate his belief in his new thought once he's thinking clearly. So he wrote, I must not take this voicemail personally because he has a lot of anxiety about having so much money tied up with me. I can help him understand the ups and downs of our investment strategies historically to comfort him during these brief market gyrations. I'll tell him assertively that I have made him money in the past and this recent slump is still a relative success compared to how other advisors are performing in these markets. So he put down 95% truth after he was able to sit back, take a step away from the whole situation and say to himself, clearly, this is not so bad. He can't take it personally, which he initially did. And the next one is outcome. By going back, he's going to look at, by thinking with a channeled thought, he can see that his anger dropped by 63% in intensity, frustration dropped in 65% in intensity, and his worry dropped 62%. Everything is much more manageable, as you can see. It was a positive outcome emotionally and behaviorally for him. And, you know, it's very important for these people to understand that they're going to go back and compare their outcomes here in terms of their channeled thought. If he believed, when he was thinking clearly, that his thought that he must not take this personally and there is a solution to this problem, he'll solve the problem. If he believes that that's 95% true when he's thinking clearly, well then, that leaves only 5% to be true for his initial enraging thought. You know, that this guy is becoming too intolerable, he's gonna tell him off, he doesn't respect him. He's proven that there is a way around that. And basically you're saying he initially thought it was 90% valid. He put a lot of stock in this initial belief when he was charged up, but then realizing now it was really, he was betting on something that was only 5% true. So he had a lot of negative outcomes for just thinking his initial thought, and I teach people to wait and think about other scenarios and get to that channel thought which impacts their emotions and their outcomes. So let's move on to Seth, the financial advisor, who called in during our last phone workshop during the Q&A segment. I wanted to use his work event because I think that is a common concern felt by many advisors who feel underappreciated or undersupported by their management team. We took some of his comments from the phone call and plugged them into the monitoring log to show you how he would manage his anger and frustration in a rational and productive way. He would start out by writing about the trigger event, which was, my branch manager slighted me by not allocating to me enough administrative support to help me manage my accounts. He noted 95 high levels of frustration and anger directed inward towards himself. So one would speculate you're going to see a lot of passive-aggressive behaviors and withdrawal. His enraging thoughts that he identified at the moment was, my branch manager helps out the other top producers and never, note the underlying word there, never aids me. I used to get more respect before. I'm not valued here. Maybe I should leave. Things will never change. And he believed at that moment that it was 90% valid. Okay, that's based on high levels of frustration and anger. He put a lot of stock in that thought. The outcomes were avoiding communication with his branch manager, social isolation from colleagues, missed appointments and calls because of lack of administrative support. He never got his solution resolved. Work apathy and laziness. So these are all passive avoidant behaviors. But then he yelled at his administrative assistant, which gives you the idea that his math may be slipping. All negative outcomes. When he thought about it and went back and tried to channel it into a productive thought, he could say, my manager has been spurred very thin lately and is not getting help either from his higher-ups or his bosses. I can talk to him about my frustration and open up a dialogue with him so that I can resolve this problem. I'm not being singled out. And he believed in that thought when he thought about it 95%, meaning that his initial thought, because it kind of invalidates it, would be only really worth 5% in reality. So that would mean he suffered negative behavioral outcomes, such as avoiding communication with his branch manager and, you know, missed appointments because he believed in a 5% valid thought when he was angry and frustrated. And we're now going to, the final R that we're going to talk about today is the R associated with relating assertively to others. As we have seen through the previous two examples, these advisors initially reacted to their heated situations in an outward, aggressive manner, or in an inward, passive-aggressive manner, respectively. They both felt out of control because of specific work situations and experienced significantly intense levels of frustration and anger, which was converted into negative and not positive outcomes. The hard E strategy was created to help individuals like Andrew and Seth take back some control over upsetting work situations by empowering them with skills that will help to get them what they want and be heard in an assertive way rather than an aggressive one. The beauty of using this strategy is you can have your cake and eat it too, meaning you'll get what you want without sacrificing your pride and will end up without negative consequences. It's a good deal. Hard E is an acronym that I use to aid in the retention of this new skill. So you should be on page 15. It gets its name because of how difficult it is for individuals in high-stress, power-driven positions to recognize, tolerate, or manage their emotions at work or at home. Each letter represents a distinct and essential element of a complete assertive strategy for getting what you want. The first letter, H, relates to being honest about what you feel and what you want. You want to first identify what you feel and be honest. Don't beat around the bush. Honesty is respected and sometimes even rewarded on Wall Street, if you can believe that. Remember, the worst thing someone can do is say no. A, appropriate time and place. Speak in an even and modulated tone of voice. Don't approach your branch manager for more support when he's dealt with a full day of meetings and has a stack of documents piling up on his desk. When talking to him, watch out for raising your voice and your tone so you don't sound like you're demanding things from him or her. Nothing puts you in the doghouse quicker than demanding from your branch manager. R, Show respect for the other individual's feelings and your relationship to them. This is the most important ingredient and is your lead-off element for your assertive statement. This will make someone less defensive and more open-minded when you speak your mind. D, talk directly to clients, to your client or coworker, manager, rather than in an indirect, passive, or aggressive way. That's the best way to get what you want. Finally, E, use emotion to disarm and verbally express the feeling that is caused by the other person. I highlighted this element because I want to underscore the importance of using emotion as a strategic advantage. This is the one time where emotion can be used as an ally for your cause and not as an enemy. And, you know, this should not come as much of a surprise to the people in my audience, but, you know, research has shown that, you know, women tend to manage and tolerate emotion and identify emotion a lot better than men. So when working with male clients or, you know, when trying to get something from somebody that's a male, this element of the hard E is so important because the minute you express how you're feeling, it puts them completely at your beck and call in terms of it disarms them. And you'll get a lot of mileage out of using this, I promise. So the hard E is the solution to indirect, passive, avoidant, and aggressive communication styles because it is direct. And as you can see on page 16, I have those types of communication styles. Maybe your branch manager is passive or avoidant, just like you. If this is the case, the cycle of passive-aggressive behaviors and negative outcomes, including uncomfortable office environment, will persist. You can take control over aggressive, passive-avoidant, or indirect communicators by using these five elements whenever you need to sit down with someone who and you want to be heard. Let's put this into practice. Staff who called in last month, I hope you're with us again because I'm going to dish out some more free advice to you because you did compliment me on the workshop that you attended. I'm going to help you piece together a statement for you using all the elements of a hard E. When you called in, I told you you should probably have sat down with your branch manager to clear the air with him about your frustrations so that you wouldn't make a rash decision like leaving your firm prematurely. Well, if you heeded this advice, great job. And if you're still waiting for advice on what to say, here it is. I'll save you the trip to my office. You initially were put off and angered by the fact that you felt slighted by your branch manager, who you felt was not allocating enough administrative support to help you manage your accounts. As I recall, you used to be a top producer at your firm, and you had been struggling to grow your business. But here's what I would do. Schedule a time with your manager's assistant and let him or her know that you will need about 15 minutes of the manager's time blocked out, and that that is during a convenient part of their day. And that the assistant should get back to you with the time and day that works for the manager. So, okay, you get the appointment set, and you need to go and prepare with your business plan or written strategy for developing and managing growth this year that you come up with. Also, I think it would be helpful to have the numbers handy that indicated your numbers during your peak performing months from the past. This will be very important, as you need to be able to show your manager that you are focused on growing your business, and, you know, it eliminates the possibility that he or she might make an excuse that you have not received extra support because you hadn't met your goals lately. Initially, it will be important to make eye contact, obviously, and shake his or her hand before sitting down and making yourself comfortable. That's fairly obvious. It's important to realize that your branch manager probably has no idea at this point. This is the beauty of it. Your branch manager has no idea that you're angry or frustrated and is a bit confused over why you even came up with such a formal meeting. But that's good for you. You will have their attention at this moment, and that's where you have to operate. So we've got to be direct. Using the hard E skills, we're going to select the A, the appropriate time and place, in the manager's office. We've done that. The manager's going to say, what brings you in today, or what can I do for you? This is your point. This is them leaving it up to you to fill in the blanks. You need to lead off with the R, which allows you to reflect an understanding for his or her position or how he or she must be feeling at that moment. So this is going to disarm the branch manager right out of the gate. Say something like this. Jim, I really appreciate the time you're taking with me right now, and I know you have so much to manage within this branch right now. I've worked with you for 5 years. I've really come into my own under your leadership. Now, just to take for a second, this may sound like butt-kissing to you, but I have to tell you, people in power positions really enjoy having their ego stroked. Remember, this is you being strategic to get what you want, if that makes you feel any better. And when you're stroking your ego, it's very subtle. You know, and remember how you would feel if someone was reflecting how nice it was to work with you. They'd be much more open to giving you something back in return. More importantly, leading off with this statement will really force them to let their guard down and allow them to hear your concerns. After that, you're going to open with the word but or however, where at this point you need to pause and look them directly in the eye, showing as much sincerity as you can muster upon your face. And then use the H, the D, and the E triple threat, which will hammer in how you're feeling in an honest and direct way, and then allow you to ask for some changes. So following the R statement and the but, you should say something like, "Lately I've been feeling like the management team has been neglecting my business and not helping me with enough support to pick up the pace, and this has really been frustrating to me. And I would appreciate it if you could collaborate with me on how we can get some more interns or part-time assistants or investment associates to help me keep up with the smaller details that I've been missing lately. I think this will really help me pick up the business and get me back to where I used to be as a top performer. Having this talk is going to enable you to avoid having to pack up your client book set and take it elsewhere. Loyalty is usually rewarded as well as longevity with a firm, so good luck with this, Seth." Let's quickly see what Andrew could say to his client when he calls him back. Calling him back at an appropriate time can be difficult, but you can leave him a message or write him an email asking him when he has a moment to conference with you on the phone or even in person, which I must say will be intimidating to him. But that's a good thing. You'll have him off of his power position, which is on the phone. Once the time is set to talk on the phone or in person, you would say something like, "Mr. Smith, we've worked together for the last 10 years, and I've really enjoyed seeing your account grow and your dreams realized. You're a very educated man, and I commend you on your interest and advice that you supply me with regularly on how to best invest your money. Now, remember, try not to sound sarcastic, because I know you're not going to believe this a minute of this while you're saying this. However, when you leave me these threatening voicemails so early in the morning, it really upsets me, and this detracts from my ability to help you make more money. Because of our long history together, I would hope that you could respect the work I've done for you enough and not leave this type of voicemail again. If you have questions that require answers, I would be happy to meet with you over lunch and discuss your options and our direction." And that, I think, is going to solve your problem. It gets across your direct concern that you don't like these threatening voicemails because it affects you and your ability to work for him. And it reflects a genuine concern for your relationship. You're showing that you really approve of, you know, some of the concern he has in managing his own account, and you appreciate it, which makes him more likely to follow through and want to help you. And lastly, on slide 17, there's two more Sun Tzu quotes, the last of which will be, "If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle." This is going to set us up for the Subtle Sales Training Workshop next month, where, you know, it's important for you to understand yourself as a personality, you know, and the characteristics that make you up individually, so that you'll understand what your clients are seeing, so that you'll have a better shot at sizing them up and knowing what they want to hear to make them relax and want to do business with you. And that is it.
Dr. Seth, I'm going to, yes, thank you very much. We have just a couple of minutes left. Operator, if you could get back on the phone and let people know how they can pose a question, that would be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. You will hear a tone indicating you have been placed in queue. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. One moment, please, for the first question.
Actually, I'm going to reach into the email. One of the emails that I got was sort of interesting and sort of unusual, a question for you, Dr. Cass. I'm going to just read it. A little bit of a curveball. "Dear Dr. Cass, my wife is currently angry at me for not spending enough time at home with the kids. She recently snapped at me over dinner because I had a late business dinner the night before. I've been having more arguments with my wife in front of the kids that can get fairly intense. I've been avoiding her when I get home from work, and I have stopped calling her from work like I used to. I feel very guilty about some of these behaviors. She says that I have been leaving clothes on the floor and leaving dishes in the sink just to piss her off. I'm so angry and annoyed with her, but I don't like confrontation. This has to get resolved because I've been avoiding many of my more important after-work networking meetings, and this is impacting my business. What should I say to her? And he adds as a P.S. that she's been a stay-at-home mother for the last 3 years, but before that she was full-time employed. Dr. Cass, how would you advise, this is Josh, I'll just use the first name.
Wow, so that is a curveball. This should be interesting. Okay, I'm going to have to give away a lot of secrets here. All right, it'll be hard to do this without ever having met the individual or his wife, so forgive me for having to make, I guess, some generalizations about this Josh. But I guess I'm going to have to assume that Josh is like most top-performing execs, whether they're male or female, that may have a tendency to get wrapped up with work and, you know, bringing in new business so much so that, you know, they might underinvest their time and emotion that they would normally set aside for their closest loved ones without even realizing it. And I guess, secondly, my second disclaimer is I'm also going to give Josh the benefit of the doubt that his networking dinners are, in fact, just for business. So, Josh, if you have kids, I guess it's safe to guess that you're in at least mid-30s or, you know, mid-40s or something like that, which gives me something to work with in terms of sizing up your life. And if you want to end the household tension with your wife and avoid making it a dramatic scene, I guess we're going to use the skills that I just went over with the hard A, and we'll start off with the A, which you want to figure out a good environment that will help get your point across and at the same time make your wife happy. As with anyone who works in a stressful job, the weekend, you know, tends to come around and you feel like distancing yourself from the world and hiding out. I know a lot of my guys feel that way who come into the office. And you mentioned your wife stopped working, 3 years ago, and she may be tired of being in the house all the time. That's a big change for a woman who had been working in the field, and she might have been, it's a change in lifestyle for her, and especially if she worked in an office or a highly interpersonal environment. And there may be some lingering resentment because of this, you know, although I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of happiness for the, you know, being there with the kids, but there could be some unresolved resentment about that. You've probably maybe become too predictable and uninvolved with making plans, so this is a strategy. Why not take her by surprise and schedule a sitter for like a Saturday night and take her to a really nice restaurant and or a show for the evening. Have the conversation over dinner. That's your A. So you're going to still make the eye contact, maybe even hold her hand, and then you're going to get to the HRD triple threat, which I mentioned before, the honesty, the respect, and the directness, and the emotion. This may sound, I guess it would sound something like this. I'll just make up a name. Susan, you know, we've been together for over 6 years, and I can't tell you enough how supportive and great you've been as my wife and as the mother of our children. I know how hard you work with the kids during the week, and I want you to know that I appreciate all you do, all the hard work you do with the family, because we couldn't be successful without you. We're very fortunate because of that. But lately, I've been feeling guilty, really guilty, because of the late-night networking dinners that I have to go to, you know, when you become angry with me, when you became angry with me the other night, you made me feel even more guilty. And, you know, it was really, I became really upset. There's the emotion. Because I really do want to be with you and the kids more often. I guess I will make sure to be more communicative in the future about these dinners and say something like, I'll be more understanding about your feelings if you can be supportive of me going to them. These business dinners are just a part of what I do for a living, and I will make up time with you and the kids over the weekends. Close with, you know, now what kind of wine would you like to celebrate with? So you end on a positive note, but I think you're getting your point across in terms of this is what you do for business, and you really appreciate all that she does at home, and you know that, you know, you should maybe even make a mention that you appreciate the fact that she has given up her time in the office and her ability to be out with friends and stuff like that during the work week, and that might be something that you want to, you know, address with her so that she can feel more open to communicating with you regularly, and that's what really needs to happen for you.
Dr. Cass, that's a great answer. We Unfortunately, we are actually, we're at 529, and we do try to keep these things to the hour that we allot for them. I want to thank everyone in the audience for participating, and especially thank you, Dr. Cass. Another great session. I want to remind people who are listening in and who may be interested in the Subtle Sales Training Workshop next month. We hope many of you will come back. And that will help you get you some more insight into understanding yourself and how to use your emotions to be more successful through work. Once again, thank you everybody for attending today. Thanks again, Dr. Cass.
No problem.
And I will turn it over back now to the AT&T operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect.
Thank you for calling the AT&T Teleconference Replay System.